And welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, joining you from Chair B. I don't know. I have nothing pithy to say today. So.
Caught you off guard, too.
You did. Actually, hear that, the turning of the pages.
Well, it's probably,
sound effects.
Probably better than the hacking I'll be doing later.
Yes, and you can hack over in that general direction, please, and thank you.
CFRU is... Jeez, here we go. Open Source is a CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to cfru.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of the screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel, or you can subscribe through iTunes. Today, we will look at the recent Ontario by-elections and what effect they may have on the policies of Catholic women, just as the Liberals are looking at another corruption scandal in the person of Energy Minister Glenn Tybalt. We will read the tea leaves and discuss the results. And then we will look forward in time, speaking of reading tea leaves, to the BC general election. British Columbians are, I don't know, is that Columbianers? I don't know. They go
Columbians?
To the polls.
Yeah, maybe.
They go to the polls in the spring. It might be a tough one for Premier Christy Clark, as her government is being chased by the usual concerns, especially the increased cost of housing in the Metro Vancouver area. So is a new term for the Liberals in doubt or a foregone conclusion? And then finally, the Liberal federal government has announced that coal power will be gone in Canada by 2030. Justin Trudeau is... Well, he's looking like there's not much political risk for him there, but there may be no political reward either, and we will look at all that. But first, we want to talk about fake news, but not the funny kind of fake news that you see on The Daily Show or The Beaverton. This is fake news, websites posing as legitimate news sites, but their content is either based on factual rumor or are completely made up. And... from the looks of things, it may be somewhat responsible for Donald Trump's presidential victory, BuzzFeed discovered. More people on Facebook were engaging with fake news websites as opposed to legitimate news sites like the Washington Post, the New York Times, Huffington Post, all those sites. And there is a, let's call it a general cause for concern that there are a lot of disenfranchised people out there who look at the keyword terms, see an article that says Pope Francis supports Donald Trump, and think that Pope Francis did support Donald Trump, even though that never happened.
Yeah, and there seems to be a bit of reluctance to people actually checking the URL. URL seems like an old-fashioned kind of thing now.
Yeah.
But there's a bit of a trick, too, because even if you are looking at them, I saw a couple listed, usatoday.com.co. And what's .co? Is that... state of Colorado, or
I think that's
what
a country.
Domain is it? One of those little countries that,
yeah.
And what's the one? Vanuatu is TV. So for a while they were using that for television.
Well, let's look it up.
Google it on the device there in the URL line, and we can beebity-beedy see what's going on. Yeah, so they are getting pretty clever, but there's all. I don't think there's enough scrutiny when people are just getting stuff dumped on your feet.
Columbia.cio is the.
Oh, really?
Is
it's
the,
Columbia. Yeah, I didn't know
for
that.
Columbia. Yeah.
I thought it was maybe. Colorado. But anyway, yeah, states don't really have them, do they?
No.
Anyway, so I'm going to give an example of two headlines that I saw this week that came up in my feed, and I want you to guess which one is real and which one isn't. I know you will, Adam, but this is just going to put this out there. Here's
we'll
number
see.
One. Trump appoints Bill Cosby as Secretary for Women's Rights. Number two. Fraser Institute denounces Mary Poppins as communist propaganda.
Oh, damn.
Which one? Which one's fake?
Which one's Mary fake Poppins, or from a fake news site?
Which one is incorrect and from a fake news site?
The Cosby one.
The Cosby one. Yeah, so that's pretty clear. But the second one, you look at that and you say, well, that might actually be, you know, or the sorry, the, both of them could potentially be true. The Cosby one is always ridiculous. It's from the WaterfordWhisperNews.com. So the
Cosby one.
Yeah, the Cosby one. So they seem to take like a name that sounds like a town. And then slap news on it.com. They've got an instant fake website. Now, NPR spoke to they're calling him the godfather of fake news. And his headline during the election was, and this was shared multiple times, 1.6 million views. FBI agent suspected in Hillary email leaks found dead in apparent murder-suicide. Now, this website is called the Denver Guardian, which sounds like a newspaper.
Yeah.
It's actually just a WordPress site that bought the domain name to the Denver Guardian, which is not real. And they talked to this guy, and he said nothing in this article is real. Absolutely everything is fictional. The guy they're talking about, the town, the police, everything named, not one ounce of it is true. Now, he said that he started doing this to sort of take on the alt-right, but I don't know how accurate that is, because if that's what you're doing, then you need to put in bold letters, satire, or, you know, not... But he got 1.6 million hits, and of course, what pays for it? It's ads. You want eyes on the prize. You want eyes on your page. You don't care how they get there, so...
Well, what's bizarre is even before this sort of became a thing, you know, you would go to Reddit and someone would post a Beaverton article.
That's right.
And somebody would be like, holy, you know, blank. This is who do they think they can get away with this? And it, like, you read like five comments down and somebody's like, it's the Beaverton. It is satire.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of have to have that on the internet for all these sites now, because they aren't doing it with satire in mind. The worst part is, I mean, it's bad enough when people like Alex Jones do it.
Oh.
And it comes from a place of, I mean, I think there's some debate about whether or not Alex Jones believes what he's shoveling, but it seems to come from a, well, let's even go like 700 Club or something like that, where from a place of the Christian News Network.
Yeah, there's no disclaimer at the beginning of that, is there? Not that I've watched
it. Yeah, but that comes from a place of ideology. The Star had an article with these two guys who created Liberty Writers News, which sounds like your super patriotic kind of site, because they're writing about liberty in the news.
Yes.
And their names are Paris Wade and Ben Goldman. Ben Goldman, pretty obvious that he's not going to be an alt-writer, just from last names. But they were unemployed, college grads. They worked in a Mexican restaurant. You know, they had no money, but they had laptops. So they start this thing, Liberty Writers News, and just start making up stuff and start pulling it out of thin air. Or they would see something on Fox News that some quote-unquote pundit would say, just like spitballing something and go, okay, that's a news story. They type up 200 words, post it to the internet, and they're getting all these hits on Facebook and all these people like writing like, and I wrote this quote down,
like
you
that.
Are the only ones I trust with the truth.
And it's completely inaccurate.
And it's completely false, and they know it's false, but they know they're getting like 6,000 hits in an hour.
Yeah.
Which is a lot.
So we've kind of gone from the truthiness that Stephen Colbert used to talk about, was sort of like there's a hint of truth in it, or somebody speaking hyperbole, just kind of making a point like Alex Jones does, but he's off the charts now, right? he does that lobster face really well, too. That's really, really scary. To the land of kind of Breitbart, where it's like, is this really news? It's newsy, but is what they're saying factually accurate? And I'm not sure. And a weird one that happened a couple months ago was CBC has that show called This Is That.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not very good at saying that it's satire. And they had a headline on one of their written stories was, and you may have heard this, Mississauga condo developer forgets to put 120 bathrooms in brand new building. Sounds like a real headline, right? Well, it turns out, I mean, that's a satire show, of course. Shared lots and lots and lots of times. I shared it in relation to something else. But I had to put that it was, and I think it wasn't until later that they put satire in the square brackets. Like, okay, this isn't true. But people, I saw a real estate agent shared it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you just see the headline and go, oh, that's unbelievable. They don't read it.
No bathrooms?
Well,
faux pas.
Yeah, exactly. It's old school where they just kind of dump it over the balcony and be like, no balconies either. Who knows? Just hold it in. I don't know. So there was a study out of, I think it was Stanford, that said that 80% of students, so we're talking the millennials, the savvy types, 80% of students cannot differentiate, you know, off the top between real and fake news. They can't.
Sad.
Do it. 80%. I would have thought, you know, maybe 50, but 80%. Because you have to go beyond, you have to look at the article and you sort of have to parse it and say, there's lots that comes up on my feed that I just ignore completely.
Yeah, I mean, it's
we all have our favorite news sites, like CFRU, but especially Thursday at 5. But yeah, some of you just, it's, you got to filter it. You got to get those filters on. And
well, what you're talking about is media literacy.
Yes. Oh, of course.
So you have to know how to differentiate between a legitimate source like the Denver Post, which is the actual Denver newspaper, and the Denver Guardian, which is 100% bullplop.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that's what we need to do. The unfortunate statistic people keep whipping out is that 90% of people distrust the mainstream media. And it's like, well, there's your problem right there. It's like, no, that's not the problem right there, because you have some people who are like the Alex Jones types who think there's a massive wholesale conspiracy for the mainstream media to sell things like Sandy Hook as real things when they were false flag operations. Mm. Alex Jones' opinion, not mine. And there are people like me who watches the CNNs and the CTVs and the CBCs and galled at the laziness or the lack of resources or the fact that they will dump all sorts of attention on a candidate like early in the primaries like Donald Trump and give no attention to somebody like George Pataki, who is more moderate and sensible.
Yeah.
I think if you were to measure, I think if you were to use a favorite metaphor of the Trump campaign, Skittles, if you were to look at the measurement of coverage of Trump and coverage of Pataki in Skittles, it would be like 300 million Skittles versus one. And, you know, that's where I kind of get mad at the mainstream media. I would say I don't trust entirely the mainstream media to bring us the important things, but I do trust the mainstream media. I trust the journalists who do good work and demonstrate good work more than Again, I just keep coming back to these two guys sitting in their pajamas in California, and people are posting their site. Where is the quote again? You are the only ones I trust with the truth, even though this article clearly demonstrates they don't know what they they know what the truth is, but they clearly don't care about that. They're selling is not the truth. What they're selling is a product.
Mm.
They're not
eyes on the page.
Right.
It's sort of like clickbait. It's not exactly like clickbait.
I think it's exactly like clickbait.
No, but clickbait's a bit more base, though, isn't it? Sort of like, look at Marsha Brady now, you know, something like that. That's not
really.
Well,
that's one type of clickbait. Yeah. I think this is the other type of clickbait,
yes,
where it reinforces, again, what you were saying, something people already feel, which is Hillary Clinton has killed a lot of people on her reckless quest for power. So when they see a headline about FBI agents investigating Hillary Clinton being found dead, they're like, there it is again.
Yes.
It was Vince Foster 20 years ago, and it's this FBI guy today. And somebody made a good point. Unfortunately, I can't remember where I found it, but I think calling it fake news, or this person said calling it fake news, is almost a disservice. What it is propaganda. It's information made up to reinforce a certain political view.
Yeah, and this, I mean, let's say 10 years ago when community radio and in particular podcasting started to come to the fore, mainstream people were always, you can't really trust those community journalists. They're not really journalists. I mean, and now we see it all the time, people getting press passes. I mean, you're one of the point people at City Hall. People trust your opinion on it because you're always there doing your tweeting or whatever.
Yeah.
Live tweet. So you have to kind of determine who you're going to trust. But community journalism, I think, and this is, well, this isn't even journalism. It's like completely fake, right? There's a hint.
Well, they're not doing journalism.
No,
they're just,
like you say, sitting in the pajamas. Now tell me, because I don't really know that much about it. Tell me about the Macedonian teenagers. What do you know about them?
They're I only know from the
mysterious
BuzzFeed
and
article.
Shady, or they're just kind of like, well, all of those hits during the election were going somewhere in Macedonia, right? Like,
right. I mean, there's this town in Macedonia. I can't remember its name, but it's basically a company town, and that company makes fake news, particularly Trump-supporting
fake
news.
I didn't realize
that. Yeah. Well, it's not a singular company, but if you were to say that Detroit is a company town, Cars, or Hollywood is a company town, movies. But, yeah, there's this town in Macedonia, and BuzzFeed went there and talked to a bunch of these people. They launched more than 140 sites. And it was all this, like, Trump reinforcing, rah, rah, rah. And they can't prove a connection to Putin or the Russians, who have a lot of people have noted seem to have a vested interest
in
having
Hillary
someone.
Clinton brought it up during the debates.
Right. Someone malleable to their point of view. And I think we can all agree Trump is friendlier to the Russians than any recent president prior to 1917. This is kind of, this is, if it's not conclusive. It's at least sketchy. And so, yeah, you have this town in Macedonia where they're just cranking it out, and making thousands of dollars from the hits, the Google hits. And I think maybe to tie a bow on this, because part of it is Facebook, too. You can't just sort of start a website and throw it out there. Part of it is feeding people mm-hmm. to it through the social media feeds. And also, again, because some people don't read any deeper than the headline. When they are
no toilets in the condo. This is an outrage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The responsibility of Facebook now. Mark Zuckerberg has said that he will be looking at trying to find a way to siphon off these obviously fake news sites.
Well,
that's the question: is it a matter of like human review, like having some people like with a set of guidelines, or is it one of these algorithm situations? But more than that, there seemed to be an initial hesitation for him to take credit for this, for helping this along. Not through no particular fault of his own. He wasn't just like, yeah, fake news is news, whatever. It was just the. Kind of turning a blind eye to the problem, like let the market will handle it kind of point of view.
Yeah, he's still making money. Why does he care?
Well, exactly. But the Facebook crew has taken credit for things like Obama's victories, Arab Spring,
yes.
These kind of.
So when it's the opposite, it's
these, yeah, these left of center populist movements. But when it comes to the right of populist movements, you're like, well, no, that's not my fault. But yeah, it's still kind of it still kind of is. I think to get what you were saying about the community news point of view it's one of these things we have to navigate, right? You know, mm-hmm. there are, and I know this from my own experience earlier this year, I'm still kind of like the redheaded stepchild down there. I mean, I do have my audience.
Sorry, that's a good one.
I still have my audience, and people do trust me and consider me a fair and balanced source and for news and information. But you know what? With the whole situation earlier this year with the closed meetings mm-hmm. and counselors talking out of turn about closed meetings, 12 Today still put the wrong link. They didn't even make it a hyperlink, mm-hmm. Which I understand, but they posted the wrong link. It was Guelph. They said it was GuelphPolitico.com. It's not GuelphPolitico.com. I think the Guelph Tribune didn't mention me by name. They didn't mention the site. And of course, famously, CTV Kitchener called me an online blogger. I still have yet to hear what is an offline blogger.
Online blogger on the internet.
Yes. He's like posting stuff up to the series.
With tape and paper, yeah.
So, yeah, so I'm still seen as like the kid, and even though I've put like a year's work into like hardcore live blogging, council coverage, and trying to make Politico a super legitimate news source. It's hard to shake that point of view. So, like, not only are these guys just hurting the business in particular, they're hurting, like, legitimate little guys who are trying to make a difference in their own backyards.
So you want real news, Google the kid at Guelph Politico. We should make an hour out of that one anyway. But
yeah.
So what's next, kid? Wow.
Speaking of kids, 19-year-old, now part of the Legislative Assembly in Ontario. His name is Sam Osteroff, and he beat the former head of the Hamilton Police Union and a lawyer, standard liberal candidate profession lawyer, in the riding of Niagara West Glenbrook, mm-hmm. former seat of Mr. Tim Hudak. And it was quite the victory for Patrick Brown, who gets another blue seat in his column. Not the clean sweep he probably would have liked. Let me see here. I want to get the names right. In Ottawa, Vanier, Natalie DeRosier won there. Of course, that was a very safe Liberal seat. They call it the safest Liberal seat in the province.
Yeah, she beat above Zanunatha, right?
Oh, and John Tremel.
John Tremel, yeah.
Now 89.
John Trammell did his debate crashing shtick, too. I saw a picture of them all lined up, and he's at the end of the table going, rawr.
Amazing.
So, there's a few others in there, too. Kevin Clark. Have we talked to him yet? No, we probably should.
Yeah.
And Greg Vazina, who has been on this show, who is the actual purveyor of the None of the Above party. So shout out to the fringe there right off the top. Because we love you guys. We really do.
I do wonder if John Trammell is going to break his break 100 this year.
That's possible.
This coming or next?
He's
I should say 2017.
Relocate for every
election.
Because
he's at 89.
Yikes!
Yeah. So there you go.
So my favorite headline of all of this was a fake news headline, and it was from the Beaverton. You probably saw it. Sam Oosterhoff, 95-year-old man trapped in a 19-year-old's body, wins a seat in the by-election because this guy is completely retro. 19.
It's funny because it's kind of true.
Nothing against the young folks running elections. I was 20 when I ran an election. He's a
no, good for him.
He's a political science student. We'll give him points for that.
Good for him.
But he is pretty retro. As he doesn't. It's not, you know, marriage is between a man and a woman. I'm sorry. I honestly don't know what he sounds like. I shouldn't mock his voice, but it's just, I'm making him sound like a 95-year-old man. Well, those LGBT people, like, you know where this guy is coming from, right?
Yeah.
And it's from that spectrum that we thought was done with the conservatives. Obviously not. Now, is it they like this guy a lot or they hate the liberals that much in Niagara or West Glenbrook?
Well, the liberal came in third place.
So. Yeah. So that's a clobbering. That's a paddling. So, but of course, as we know with these things, it was only like 32% of eligible voters came out. Right.
Oh, by election.
And the election's still a mile off, right? It was at June 2018. So yeah. it's not as if this is going to be a reflection of what's going to happen. Of course, Patrick Brown's going to be excited because he now has another seat. But I don't think.
Well, he has the same seat. He got to keep a seat.
Yes, of course. So it's just it's a zero sum, yeah. I suppose. But I mean, even so, if it's some kind of great reflection of the hatred of the Liberal government, I mean, we won't know until June 2018, if that's true. Now, there's obviously lots of problems there, but they managed to keep the seat in Ottawa as well, though, right? So it's not as if this was just like a nil-nil, really, a draw.
Well, Patrick Brown gets credit for winning the news cycle, I think, because all you could hear about was Sam Oosterhoff, in spite of the fact...
What a charming young man. He's really 95 years old now.
But in spite of the fact that, he's kind of drudges up these social conservative things. And I did read I think it was a Star article about how the Niagara region is kind of like the Ontario Bible Belt.
Mm-hmm.
It's perhaps not surprising that someone who is quote-unquote traditional values would win.
Well, I forgot to mention the absolute best traditional values candidate that was in that same riding was Queenie Yu of the Stop the Sex Ed Agenda Party. 76 votes for Queenie Yu. But she made a point at one of the all candidates, and it was a bona fide all candidates, not just the ones with the potential of winning. She made a point of like endorsing Oosterhoff at that.
Sure.
Is she kind of pointed and said, you know, I'm so glad that he's in this. It was a bit of a plant, I guess. The Animal Alliance woman did that here for Frank Valeriot back in the days.
So yeah, I remember that.
And I was like, why are you even here? So Queenie Yu, there you go. Stop the sex ed agenda. Did she come in ahead? She came in ahead of Trammell, I think. I don't know.
Well, Trammell was Ottawa venue.
Ah, but I just meant a number of votes.
Trammell got 51.
51. There you go. Good job, John. Your hard hat. Yeah, so... Yeah, you know, it's the hard hat. What does it say? The engineer or something?
Yes, he is the engineer.
He's listening and he's going to write like hate tweets.
Oh, we're going to get it later.
I've always wanted to have him on, actually.
Oh, I'd love it.
Because we love the fringe, as I said maybe, before. But that's the thing. We're at the point where we're just sort of talking about the fringe because it's not really a surprise, except for the young fella. But it sounds like in researching this too, and I didn't realize this, I think I missed the announcement that there's going to be 15 more seats in the next election. I guess you knew that, eh?
Yeah,
they're going to be up from 107 to 122.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be sort of based on the federal ridings too, right? They figure
probably
that's a fair analysis.
Sounds about right.
And that the date is going to move, so maybe it won't be June. I don't know if they've done a solid on that yet, but I'd heard that the date is going to move to the spring. Everybody's just going to get so tired of waiting. We're tired already. We want to have an election
show
right now.
It'll move a month forward.
Oh, yeah, I guess May to June. It's going to be, yeah. Actually, if it was on June 19th, it would be in the spring, right?
Yeah.
June 21st, it's the summer.
Right.
Clever liberals.
Well, it's they got to get it out of the way. And for because the municipal election is that fall. You're not going to want to have the,
oh yeah, that's right, yeah,
the two of them back to back. I almost wish the Liberals would have just stuck it up and said like, okay, we're in because we don't want to have like back to back you know, elections in 1 year. We're going to have the provincial election in spring 2017 and just, you know, suck it up, take their medicine
so
6 months
early. So
much
for fixed election dates. Of course, when we have them, people campaign continuously, as we'll talk about when we talk about BC. But yeah,
that's
it's,
right.
Yeah, because it's just, I don't know.
But I mean, that's kind of messed up. What will be interesting to see is a lot of people, yeah, we're praising Osterhoff for his traditional values credentials. I think it's just going to make life more difficult for Patrick Brown, because Patrick Brown seems to want to get over the hump of this stuff.
He wants it all, yeah.
And the Liberals were playing it up, laying on pretty thick in Niagara as well. It's like, here you go, preview of things to come. And, you know, they almost didn't campaign on their own issues. It was basically dumping on this kid for believing in traditional marriage, quote unquote,
it's
traditional
gonna be
marriage.
The Lord's Prayer before every meeting. And
yeah,
God save the Queen.
I mean, he's you know, a homeschooled kid, you know. So I mean,
was he?
Yeah, you know. So what does he know? I mean, I don't mean that out of disrespect, but I mean,
he is an MPP. We'll give him that. But.
Right, but I don't mean that out of sense or disrespect. But I mean, he's a 19-year-old kid who spent his entire life like socializing and being socialized at home.
And generally, the people, and this is my own opinion too, but when there's a faith element in that you hate the school system that much, and then there's homeschooling involved, it does sort of
change. Right.
I suppose back in the day, a lot of people were homeschooled, but now, like, he's going to be an interesting MPP, I'll put it that way. So we're going to be watching him closely. he's the youngest guy, right? You know, it's.
We should probably
like a CFF person. CCF person.
Yeah. Well, he's
many moons ago.
I'm not sure his ambitions in getting into it. I'm not sure what circumstances are.
Yeah,
you know,
he's
if there
still
was a
university student, right?
Yeah, he's in Brock.
So homeschoolers can get into Brock.
Don't go there.
No, I guess not. Sorry, Brock. You probably get in here too. I had a homeschool girl in my class, and she would just sort of talk.
Well,
as if she was in the living room. There's like 200 people there, and she would just start talking.
Yeah, that's what she's used to.
Start talking, like,
good on her.
And we probably laughed a little too much at her.
But
sorry, person in my class.
But I'm kind of interested in like who else would try to get the nomination if it was like I don't know.
It was somebody old school, what, like somebody that died in the wool conservative a long time. God, what's his name again? That tried to get the nomination. And Osterhoff beat him, right?
We'll have to fact check
that
later.
Drawn, but we're exhausted, people. We're just been
but we should mention Glenn Tibble, which is like more fallout of that 2015 by-election in Sudbury. That just like it's like Night of the Living Dead for the Liberals on this, because the Pat Sorbera and Gary Laughey trial, I think, starts next week on their bribery counts. So, you know, just when you thought it was, just when Kathleen Wynne thought she was out, they pull her back in, and it's...
Maybe she's going to step down like McGinty did.
I doubt it.
We're going to reset. No, she's a lifer. She's in it until the walls come tumbling down.
Yeah, she's going to go down with the ship if the ship does indeed go down.
This time...
We'll be addressing this next after the break. That's the BC election, and a lot of people are saying maybe Christy Clark's last stand, but you know they've been saying that for a while. So we're going to find out. We're going to dig deep into that after the break, plus talk about coal and why that's going to be a thing of the past, fingers crossed. And we're going to play some music and then come right back. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
CFRU Archive.
Make America great again. A melting pot of diversity fighting a juggernaut of adversity.
Thank you.
Now, you've got to admit, 87 years ago, the Confederates had a strong...
Oh, he could go on talking forever. Adam, what do you guess that song was called?
Mr. Tambourine Man.
Yes, that's it. Mr. Tambourine Man, yeah. That was Make America Great Again, from the album Make America Great Again. Where was this album during the election? I don't know. Delfeo Marsias.
Better late than never.
One of the Marsias brothers. And the Uptown Jazz Orchestra. There's so many Marsias brothers. I don't know. Yeah, that's new into the station. From it's on Troubadour Jazz Records. So,
you know, it's not... The timing isn't perfect, but, I mean, the process of making America great again has just begun. Mm-hmm. So, we should have a soundtrack.
Make jazz great again. There you go. We don't play a lot of jazz, except when the jazz festival's on, so... We'll save this
one. And then, begrudgingly...
We'll park it for another day and see what else is on it. Also, we take requests. If you want to send us a request, by all means, wait for our numbers at the end and you can send us a request. It'll be like, can you play Far Away? Yes. Okay. What's up next, Adam?
Well, thank you for that. So, British Columbia, which is a province you may know on the West Coast, is going to be having a provincial election in the new year, rather distant in the near May. But it is coming up because recently the Liberal Party and the NDP Party both had conventions to sort of get members riled up. They are presently selecting candidates in all 85 of British Columbia's ridings. And even the Taiyi, which is an online news source dedicated
trusted
to-
by us.
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
They're not fake news. No.
No.
But they were recently fundraising to get a correspondent to cover the BC election in depth. So, I mean, even though it's, it's not even December yet. So, like, even 6 months away from a BC election, people are already starting to think about it. So we thought we'd think about it as well. It seems like it's kind of... Christy Clark's to lose, even though the Liberals are kind of getting, like it's Liberals. Government's kind of due over time, sort of scandalous, sort of long in the tooth. A lot of people looking for alternatives, but Christy Clark is going into her second election as leader versus John Horgan, the NDP leader, who's going into his first election as leader. And there actually hasn't been too much of a difference between the seats, and I looked up the standings. So the Liberals have lost only two seats from when they won the election in 2013. They have 47 seats now, used to have 49. The NDP, meanwhile, also lost a seat. They've lost one seat. They won 36 at the beginning of the election, or at the end of the election, and have 35 seats today. Poor old Green Party, one seat. Although, I mean, that was kind of a breakthrough that a Green Party candidate won a provincial seat. But one Green Party seat, you think they would have been able to capitalize that and buy elections.
Is it Andrew Weaver? He's the leader. Does he have the seat? I should know this, but I'm not sure.
Good question.
Sorry to put you on the spot again. Ask the
group. No, it's all right. That's why the computer's here.
Fine. So...
You talk for a while.
Yeah, okay. So percentage-wise, at least in 308.com, another trusted news source... they had the last poll that they had the Liberals and the NDP tied for the lead. So they seem to be neck and neck. Now, polls are polls. We've seen recently how great polls are, but Greens is 16% and the BC Conservatives, which is, they just keep on going like the Energizer Bunny at 14%. As far as I understand it, the Conservatives in BC haven't had a seat since 1975.
Right.
So as we know, or is generally accepted, the Liberals are the de facto conservative party in BC. They don't really have they do have a conservative party, but it's kind of a name only. And I think back in the day, too, Christy Clark didn't she start off as a bit of an underdog? She was kind of an unlikely person to lead the Liberals.
Yeah,
then.
That sounds right.
But then now, and I think this might have even been on the Taiyi, now she's a bit of a star in that she has some power. She's been, I wouldn't say mover and a shaker, but moving with them anyway and trying, I think... It sounds like the plan for this election, or at least that they're steering the course for the next 6 months, is sort of focusing on the things that she'd promised. I think 2 or 3 years ago, liquid natural gas was to be a big thing, and it has become a big thing now in that it's been approved. There's other stuff like the Kinder Morgan pipeline. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like they're – and you know, encouraging people, or sorry, encouraging infrastructure projects, put a bridge here and put rapid transit there and just sort of sprinkle it around, as liberals do, in my view, and just say, okay, we're gonna be all things to everybody, and then you can elect us again. I don't know. I think the only real, and I don't know if it's going to be detrimental to them, was the home buyer tax, right, which made the market tank a bit in Vancouver, at least. I don't know about the rest of BC. So,
interestingly, I don't know how it affects BC specifically, but I was talking to actual Guelph real estate people who are brokers and realtors for a future Guelph Politicast, and they're saying that the new federal regulations have had an effect because, you know, people are going to be looking to sell the houses they bought in the last couple of years, and maybe 3 or 4 or 5 years, and may not be getting the return they thought they were going to get because of the new regulations.
Mm-hmm. There's no 30-year mortgages anymore, things like that.
That's right. So something that's having a national effect. For BC, yeah, that's going to... Because there are a lot of people who are rushing to get paperwork done before the rules went into effect. So that I think that's somewhere that they can be tripped up. Fact check break. Andrew Weaver, yes. He's the MLA for Oak Bay Gordon Head, and he is the current Green Party leader in BC.
And he was also BC the one that, at one point, when the BDS controversy, I guess, hit the Greens when they decided they were going to support that movement. Mm-hmm. I think Andrew Weaver was very vocal in wanting to change the name of the Green Party to something else to sort of distance themselves from these radicals, I guess we're talking about. And that's not surprising, I suppose. Horgan, is it Jim Horgan? The leader of the NDP?
John Horgan.
John Horgan, yeah. NDP leader. I think they're pretty much going to be a status quo approach to it. I've read two or three places. Everyday Families seems to be there. It's like Everyday People, but with families. It sounds like typical.
Well, he's promised $15 an hour minimum wage,
yes,
$10
yep.
a day daycare, and that they would adopt the Truth and Reconciliation recommendations, which is interesting that the present government hasn't adopted mm-hmm. those regulations yet, because BC, of course, is home to the Highway of Tears.
Yes, and Christy Clark takes great pride in wearing that kind of hide a blankety thing. It's actually very nice looking, but I think there's a bit of that. Trudeau does it to kind of working their way into the Indigenous community, in my view. So,
well, it's interesting.
You can show up, but you got to do some stuff.
Because the Tyee had an editorial that that Christy Clark is also not doing enough for women. And of course, this was a big thing recently, because as we talked about last week, Sandra Jansen, who after last week's show defected to the NDP in Alberta.
Which is surprising. Conservatives don't go NDP generally, do they? I've never heard of that.
That would have to be rather unprecedented.
It's a first, yeah.
But
we'll call it a first.
But, I mean, she took a lot of, let's call it flack,
getting
for lack of a better word.
Read into the record there the other day? My goodness.
Yeah, that was rough. But as to women in politics, you know, they kind of said, well, Christy Clark likes to talk about it, but she hasn't done a lot, because you have child care issues in BC. I mean, right across the country, but half the kids in BC live in one parent households. I got that statistic wrong. Half the kids who live in one parent households live in poverty. 83% of one parent households are the parent is the mother. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have almost 9 out of 10 families in poverty with one parent families with the mother. I mean, that's kind of a startling factoid there. On top of the fact that the living wage, they calculated the living wage for Metro Vancouver, $20.64.
Wow.
So even like the NDP's own $15 an hour minimum wage
is
not a living wage, which is crazy.
Yeah. So and all those issues, and also you see it a lot with it, I guess, because it's a warm climate too. The amount of at least in Greater Vancouver and Vancouver itself, the people are struggling with substance abuse problems and homelessness.
Yeah, opioid,
in general.
Opioid addiction
is. I'm not going to put it out there that it's the largest in the nation, but I think it may be to do with the climate, and that there's a. It's just massive. There have been a couple of exposés on CBC regarding that. So something else that they haven't really dealt with. But, I mean, that's been a problem. I've only been to BC once. It was almost 30 years ago, and it was a problem then, too. So, mm-hmm. Also, there may be a bit of, I'm not sure where whether it will touch them or not, that the cash for access scandal or wannabe scandal that's going on at the federal level has brushed the, let's just say, slightly touched the BC Liberals a bit in that, I think his name is Shengling Jian, there's a photo of Trudeau and Shengling Jian, who's a Chinese businessman, sitting with their bottles of 50. All the bottles of Labatt 50 are actually turned toward the camera. It's shameless stuff. Labatt is a Liberal donor as well, right, as we know. $10,000 to the BC Liberals.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as if it's just at the federal level this is coming down. It's like there's being cash spread around too. Whether that will, there's still time, I guess, for that controversy to fizzle a bit or to get worse too.
There was the conflict of interest charges against Christy Clark. She was cleared, but it seems like the advocacy group that brought that forward is going to take it all the way to the Supreme Court, where I can't imagine there's going to be much traction to overturn what was previously decided. But having said that, it probably doesn't suit you 6 months before an election to
be in court.
To be in court and have words like conflict of interest be thrown around.
Timing is everything when it comes to stuff like that, right? Although
Absolutely.
It didn't seem to do anything for Trump.
Well,
I'm just going to pay them out because I've got billions. Yeah.
Well, I think we weren't going to talk about
Trump.
No,
I know.
But that's kind of been accelerated because of his actions immediately following the election. But I think BC is one of the problem places in this country in terms of, or maybe I'm thinking about this wrong. I'd have to refer to my notes last week.
Global News called it the Bermuda Triangle of political races.
And there you go.
The three points of the triangle are probably the Liberals, the New Democrats, and I think the Greens because the Conservatives aren't really on the radar.
No.
It seems that Dan Brooks, the leader of the Conservatives, stepped down earlier this year, and now he's back, which tells me that nobody really wants that job.
Well, it sounds like the Bloc situation.
Yeah, it's like, okay, can you do it again, Dan? And okay.
Yeah.
So, who knows how they'll do this time, but...
Well, actually, BC is pretty tight for some of their camp. But, I mean, so that maybe makes it a bit more galling that she'd be swept up in this because, as we talked about before, the federal realm is kind of the wild, wild west, and there are different standards provincially. Considering that BC's stuff is a bit tighter, the fact that this came forward to review at all is kind of startling and not very good for her. And to keep up with the fake news kind of perspective, she at the Liberal convention, she was talking about, like, don't believe the polls, don't believe the polls, which, of course, said it. The Liberals look very, very good for re-election. Of course, this time in 2013, the NDP were, I think, 17 points ahead.
Mm.
So you can never be too sure with those polls, man.
Remains to be seen.
Yes.
But she was a journalist too, right, by trade? So
I think so.
Yeah. So not anymore.
To be continued. Ooh. Take that, Christy Clark, wherever you are.
What a zinger. Yes.
Not anymore. Waka waka. No. We're going to talk about coal next. And kind of a surprise announcement. I don't think anyone kind of saw it coming. But Catherine McKenna announced that Canada will phase out traditional coal burning power by 2030. So that's 13 years away. In particular, it affects, which is kind of weird considering the oil and gas wealth, but it particularly seems to affect Alberta and Saskatchewan, as well as Nova Scotia and New Brunswick, so like out east and then in the prairies, where you think it would be all gas and oil, but no, they actually still burn coal as well. And I was kind of heartened to learn, I mean, aside from the fact that Ontario has phased out coal entirely, 80% of Canada's power is drawn from non-emitting sources, so things like, turbines and that, nuclear power, of course. Let me see, where I got 11% of the electricity in Canada is created by coal. So, I mean, it's a significant percentage for sure, but it's not like 50%.
It used to be.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, because I'm one of those people that kind of argues that nuclear isn't exactly non-emitting, but that's probably a a whole nother story. But yeah, I grew up beside Lakeview Power Plant. You probably, everybody knew it. They called it the Four Sisters, the smokestacks. It's kind of odd growing up knowing that you're getting close to home when you see this giant power plant, but and there's a giant coal bing, a mountain of coal beside as well that would occasionally catch fire. And, you know, you knew industry was working and things were great when this thing was just all four stacks chugging in the middle of the winter, right? Dumping crap everywhere. But, of course, Lakeview is gone now. It's going to be turned into a housing development. And this is the thing about this announcement is that coal was sort of on its way out already. This is pretty much low-hanging fruit, I think, for the Liberals. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the visible coal plants are gone. The ones that we don't see around the periphery. And there still are some plants that run. I think there's a few that still run on oil and, like, fuel oil.
Yeah.
And things that you wouldn't consider. So when the visuals are gone, like Lakeview is gone, probably the most significant, I think Nanticoke is gone as well. It doesn't, yeah, is it going to have a great effect? And I guess you can't really, they're going to keep some coal plants for backup, I think. And unless you couldn't, you need to work on carbon capture and storage, I think is one of the conditions for you to maintain your coal plant. Now, of course,
yeah,
the older ones, they won't. Now, part of the problem with this is that one of the biggest coal polluters in the country, other than the mining of it too, which is a bit of a separate world, is the making of steel. And part of what's going on in Hamilton right now is that they're not really making steel, but they're making, it's called coked coal. That's, they sort of burn it a bit and then they use it in the steel making process. And that's pretty much all that Stelco is doing right now. And that it's been grandfathered in because these kinds of plants, they don't really build them anymore. So you take sort of sub-quality coal or lesser quality, burn it a bit, and then it becomes, you're able to make steel with it. There's been no provision for that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So on top of that, too, with what sounds like, although Trump did say clean coal in his little talk there, it sounds like if the coal fields of Ohio and whatever crank up again and they sort of reboot some of these coal-fired generation in the U.S. to, you know, create all of these jobs to make America great again, then that cloud, and I remember that cloud, up until the late 80s, including living beside Lakeview, just sort of worked its way up into southwestern Ontario, some of the worst air quality that the nation had ever seen due to the way the climate was then and maybe the way the climate's going now. So on the whole, it is a pretty good move, but at the same time, it's not a huge move.
Well, even for Trump, who's like sort of flagrantly anti-coal or
pro-coal. Correction.
Or anti-canning coal, I should say. But yeah, he still faces an uphill battle. I mean, just the industry itself, just it doesn't have the support it used to have. It's passé.
Yeah.
It's,
well, and that's the value of the product itself, yeah, too. I mean, if you want to look at it from a purely capitalist perspective, it's in the toilet.
Yeah.
Coal's peak, I think, was in the late 70s. And then as, you know, time goes on, as they as they develop the ability, and most of, I believe, most of Ontario's plants, not the energy itself, but all the little plants are natural gas. The little one on Trafalgar and the 401, you see those two stacks, it's natural gas. So they've taken, you know, these two types of energy, coal and natural gas, and they're banking on natural gas because it's cleaner. It's easier to deliver to. You can deliver with a pipeline. You don't have to show up with a truck or whatever, or a ship and shovel it in.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's nuclear too, right?
Mm-hmm.
And hydro. Are we going to start buying hydro from Quebec? It seems that may be in the cards. I don't know, but coal is definitely on its way out for almost purely economic reasons and environmental too, because like I said, the visuals are great, getting rid of it, and our lungs are better. The air quality of the province has improved markedly from 30 years ago,
I mean,
and that's a great thing.
Yeah, think of how hot it was this summer and how many bad air days there were. I can't remember how many, but it couldn't have been that many. And it was like perpetually hot through like June, July, August, with no rain whatsoever. So you got to think back like 15, maybe 20 years and just the sheer smog of it. How, you know, being a kid with asthma, you know, you go to school and it's a really hot day. You have to
did
go
you,
with
you have asthma?
I did when I was a kid.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, there you go.
The secrets are out.
A little trivia. But yeah, when you go to school on a really hot day, and it's smoggy. You have to, and you have gym. You have to go with a note that says like you can't. Take it easy that day. And this was before like central air was kind of prevalent in schools too. So
Schools have central air. That's how long it's been since I've been in school. There's air conditioning.
But yeah, my high school was an older school, and you know there wasn't central air, and so it was really hot outside, and it was a bad air day, and you had asthma, and you weren't going to be doing a lot of running in gym class. So yeah, I do agree with you about the low hanging fruit comment. It is, I think, fairly. It's a fairly simple move for him to make, and it seems to be like that Trudeau is really good at like being bold on the simple moves. The more difficult moves coming up is there are three pipeline projects that have to have decisions in the coming month. And of course, as the Financial Post so eloquently pointed out, that there's a definite lack of, planning, foresight. In terms of what's going to happen after you shut off like 8% of the electricity, or 11% of where the electricity comes from. And it's worth pointing out that another reason this is low-hanging fruit, there are four facilities that just won't be able to adapt. They'll have to be shut down. And one's in Saskatchewan, one's in New Brunswick, and the other's in Nova Scotia. And on top of it all, coal is probably Canada coal. I mean, people are probably worried about jobs, and coal will probably be fine because we're still going to be exporting it to Asia, where they still burn lots and lots of coal. So,
yeah, but like I said before about the market tanking, that the main, what's the development in BC? Tumbler Ridge, I guess it was called. And that coal is particularly used for steel. The company that runs several of these other companies, I think it's EMP or ERP. Corporation, one of their main things is that they buy coal, but then it's sort of coupled with these carbon offsets. Part of the whole purpose of their existence is sort of doing the carbon offset shuffle. It's like, well, we've bought this coal, and then we have these offsets. So, and that's always my opinion with the offsets, is that once the offsets have become a commodity, that you put the price, everybody's like, we need to put a price on carbon. So you put the price on carbon, then it becomes this commodity. And of course, commodities are things that people trade in. So is that the best way to clean the air, phase out coal, and bring in renewables? And of course, because the complaint you always hear about renewables, and you'll all of the time is, well, it's so heavily subsidized, blah, blah, blah. It's only whatever percent of our production, 10% or... That's not even. So why are we spending all this money to get into renewables? But, and there, I guess there is a different way to do renewables than the way it has happened in this province is, what works for Germany should work in other places.
It's worth pointing out that when you live in Alberta, the oil industry is pretty heavily subsidized.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot of corporate welfare to go around.
Oh, it all is. But when you have a... something like energy, which is controlled by the state generally in this country, although that's changing now, especially in Ontario with this sell-off. Is it getting any better? Is your hydro rate going to get any cheaper? I don't think so. If anything, it's going to be more. Now, they're saying there's going to be some relief on hydro rates in this province, but I can't see it. Because generally when the trend is up, it goes up and it doesn't come down. Unless we come up with that miracle generation or they decide to slap Elon Musk's shingles on everybody's house at a subsidy. It just isn't going to happen.
Well, that's the thing. It's going to be I don't know if you could call it a subsidy, but if Wynn is serious about bringing down hydro rates, that's what they're going to have to do, is put like a 2%, 3% subsidy and say that the province is going to pay for that portion of everyone's electricity bill so that they can get the rates down, which probably is too little too late, I imagine.
But then there's also an issue they could take, like insulating people's homes and that. I know the Greens advocate for that, among others, which would help.
Yeah.
But the rates are too damn high. I think we're all in agreement on that. Left, right, center. It's like you see your hydro bill and you go, what? So will that change? Will that be the sort of, candy that Premier Wynne is going to offer next time around? It's like, well, we cut your hydro rate by X. I don't know. I can't see it. I wish there was better control over it. We could do a whole show on hydro, too, but...
Probably.
But we only have a minute left.
but these are good things to keep in mind as we approach the year end. And We will be doing our usual. It's like our second year doing these things, but
built on a longstanding tradition.
That's so true. Coming up at the end of the year, we will be having our annual award show. Scotty and I were having a bit of a debate what kind of show we wanted to do for the Christmas show. Either another movies, like favorite documentaries, political documentaries, or like a listener request, like you ask questions and we answer them. You know what? Let us know. Let us know, and we'll choose one or the other.
It's better than me singing Bing Crosby songs, so.
That is plan B.
Better decide.
You can let us know at our website, opensourcesguelph.com, at opensources, newswire on Facebook, at @OS_Guelph on the Twitter. And you can also use those feeds to ask us questions that we can then put to some upcoming guests. Leanne Piper, Ward 4 Counselor, will be on December the 8th. And then the next week, December 15th, that will be Mayor Cam Guthrie for the whole hour. So we'll need lots of great listener questions for that. So feel free to send those in. You can listen to this episode or any previous episode of Open Sources Guelph on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or through iTunes. You can connect with me at Adam A. Donaldson on Twitter or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at the Spanner Book. I was doing that power ending because we got to go.
Yeah, we got to go because DJ Sounds Good to Me is here at the top of the hour on CFRU, 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio, and we'll be back here next week at Thursday at 5.